Vusi Tambakwayo, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Brother Feldman, are you well?
You know what? I was well until I saw what you tweeted this morning about some new device. I'm actually a little uncomfortable right now. But yes. So this is, I mean, we're living in the world of innovation, I suppose. I'm not even going to describe what Vusi tweeted, but it's a device only for men and I don't even know what it is. But either way, there is a lot of innovation coming out of everywhere. Do you think that at times like this, when we are in chaos, we are in negativity, we're in when we're all over the show, do you think there's more innovation that comes out of a time like this, or do we just sort of hunker down and try and survive?
Definitely more innovation, no doubt in my mind about it. But I think one of the things that's interesting is who it is that innovates. So what the literature actually shows us is the people who innovate the most during periods like these are the people who are least attached to the way things used to be. This is often why during times like these, new businesses are formed at a higher rate than during times of comfort or times of linear kind of economic performance. It's because people who all of a sudden realize that they're going to be left out of the system then decide that they're going to take matters into their own hands. It forces a sense of initiative, if you will. So there's definitely more innovation about that, there's no doubt.
Do you think that we're starting to see any of that in South Africa? You've been highly critical of government. Give us your view for anybody, any of the millions of people who haven't seen.
Especially Eskom, because I saw his video on Eskom.
Oh,
very, very passionate.
Yes. Was he more miserable than me about
yes,
it?
Yes, I think
Is
so.
Is that even possible?
I thought it wasn't possible, but after I saw his video.
My heart was filled with hate yesterday. Was the hate yesterday for Eskom. Mm.
I think the thing with Eskom, right, is, well, Eskom actually is a perfect reflection of the broader failures within the state.
Right.
You know, just simple lack of accountability, the inability to appreciate the size and scope of the problem, and even more importantly, the persistent want and need by politicians to politic about things about which we shouldn't be politicking. One of the things we've learned from developmental states that have done well and developing nations that are continuing to do well is actually that those countries know the things about which you can and cannot politic. So, for instance, in the U.S., housing has had issues around redlining.
Right.
And those issues were redlining kind of found their ways into kind of the middle 2000s. And then what happened was there was a recognition by the federal government that if they don't address those issues, they're going to impede the rate of growth of the middle class, which is the backbone of the United States. There have been several initiatives to try and address that issue since then. So my frustration, I think, with Eskom is actually that it appears to me that the people who have the power don't seem to realize what that means, but more importantly, that those of us as citizens don't seem to realize that we also have power in terms of informing the Eskom debate. Let me just say very quickly, the best thing that's going to happen to you and me as English-speaking South Africans who are meeting on Skype or Zoom or team meetings is the informal sector. The informal sector is going to save all of us. And the reason the informal sector is going to save all of us is because they don't have time for Zoom meetings and PowerPoint presentations with government.
They yeah, take I love that
free too. Makes me smile because it's so right. Yeah.
I mean, you've seen it with the taxi industry. The taxi industry immediately went to the streets. This morning, tavern owners have given government an ultimatum. And my expectation is that government is going to be forced to respond, right? So just watch the people who are in the informal sector. They don't have time for the sophistries and the nice talks and the resolutions that come out of these meetings. And I think they're going to be our saving grace. I suppose the real question is, which segment of our society is going to take on the Eskom issue, in particular which segment of the informal society is going to take on the Eskom issue, because then we would actually see real action. Unfortunately, our government just doesn't respond to polite talk anymore. You know, this is why communities take to service delivery protests and they burn libraries. They just don't respond to civilized conversation anymore. I think they've become so desensitized to the suffering of the majority of South Africans and to the erosion of the rule of law and the absolute proliferation of corruption.
Yeah.
That the only thing they listen to is if you act in a manner that is so, so violent, so extreme and so violent that it forces their eyes to take a look.
Well, if you look at the example or exactly the one that you're giving around the taxi industry, the fact that government didn't meet with the liquor industry, anyone involved in alcohol, but met with the taxi industry, it proves exactly that. Because it would have been a polite meeting with no threat being held over the heads of government. Whereas the taxi industry is very clear that they will bring this country to a standstill. And so they got what they want. And without compromise. I mean, opening a window 5 centimeters, I'm not sure saved Cyril Ramaphosa's face at all. But, it just shows exactly what you're saying.
You know, so even the opening of the window thing, for me, is just so arb, isn't it? It's a bit like, here's the real question that I think a lot of us are really not asking ourselves. Do we really trust these people? And I think the reason that's an important question to ask is because if we don't, then we have to ask ourselves the question, and why don't we? I suspect the answer is no, we don't. And the truth is we don't because they're not sharing with us the metadata that they're using to make the decisions that they're using. And I suspect that's the case because they themselves are conflicted on the metadata and what that data actually means. So it's not uncommon, for instance, to have one resolution being passed by government and then a different resolution from the National Coronavirus Council, NCC, OP, OC, those people. And then, you know, a news outlet has a scientist on the same channel the same day rebutting the evidence that the government has used to make that decision. So 5 centimeter open of a window, it just seems so arbitrary to me. It's a bit like, why 5? Why not 4? Why not 6? And so how do long distance taxis do it? I mean, you're trying to tell me that if they're driving from Lusikisiki to Joburg, they're going to open a window for 5 centimeters the whole time? And, well, that journey would be untenable.
And even if they did, I mean, the fact that that is even thought to protect the people inside is laughable. It was a way to save face, I believe, but didn't at all. In fact, it made them look more stupid.
Well, and so, I mean, you know, if I can just expand on this to your point, right? So for instance, you allow it for the taxi industry. So what about buses then? And what about trains? At the end of the day, commuter transport is commuter transport, right? And the idea must hold that if you say opening a window by 5 centimeters is going to, in some miraculous way, reduce the risk of contracting the virus. I mean, geez, somebody tell Dr. Fauci that we've just found it. We've got the answer, guys. Open your window for 5 centimeters.
Exactly.
You know, so if that's the, what about Ubers? It's so arbitrary. It's laughable. And because of this, I think, I really do think that there's actually something else for us to consider, and I'll tell you what it is. I think that there's been a miseducation of the average South African. If you look at the rate at which our education system has been deteriorating, particularly over the past 20 years, and I'm going back since the days of, you know, kind of OBE was introduced, and then it just became I won't use the word, but you get the point. And since then, the rate of deterioration in our education system means that every single time I see it on my Twitter feed, post a conversation that is remotely nuanced, remotely intelligent, and there's just a barrage of attack on the conversation, or it's completely ignored. There's no middle ground where people try and find a way to engage with it. And I think that's a reflection of the society that we've become. I say this because I think that's exactly the elements that our government is actually playing to. But we've reached this point in our society where the ideas don't matter. Who holds them does. So there's some things, for instance, I can say, but Brother Feldman, you can't say them because you're a white man.
Right, exactly. And if you did, because I'll be told to stay in my lane.
100%. And this is, you know, almost as if you're not a citizen, almost as if you don't matter.
As if I'm not in the same swimming pool. It's exactly right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I mean, this isn't a thing that's unique to South Africa. We've seen it all around the world. But how do you, you know, get your point across without getting a barrage of criticism on your timeline or anywhere for that matter?
It's a great question. Yeah. What does your timeline look like in terms of pushback?
So one of the things I've been quite lucky on this. By the way, there are a fair number of people out there who don't like me. I'm comfortable with not being liked as long as I'm not being liked for speaking the truth as I see it. Now, right. It's not my intent to cause offense. So it's not, you know, if you take umbrage, that's not the intent. But you, to use your swimming pool analogy, if you're about to jump in the pool in the dead of winter, as we are in, and I said to you, if you do that, you might get the flu. And you said to me, Vusi, you're ugly. It doesn't take away from the fact that if you jump, there is a correlation between your jumping in the water and your, and, you know, the rate at which you might get the flu. So what we've seen now is a mix of these two things. You say one, people say ABC. I'm talking numerics, you're talking letters. We're not even in the same playing ground having the same conversation. You are quite right when you say it's not uniquely South African. I do think that what is uniquely South African is the default to race. That's definitely uniquely South African. And I think, you know, a friend of mine talks very compellingly about how identity politics just found mainstream and found a voice, you know. So for instance, if you held a counter view on the land debate, which as a South African you can do, it's your right to have a view on the land debate. But before that view is examined, who you are is going to be examined first, almost as if that informs your position. Now it might well do, but even that notwithstanding, people must still spend the time trying to understand and debut and, you know, argue your view. So your question was, how do I deal with it? You know, my timeline is a mix of opinion and a lot of data. So I try and publish as much because I'm a, you know, relentless reader. So if you go to my timeline right now, probably the last five or six posts you'll see are all from Businessweek, Bloomberg Terminal, Wall Street Journal, Vice News, The Big Think, a whole hope, because I'm spending time trying to immerse myself in ideas, information, and knowledge that's coming out of thinkers, writers in the world. And then around that, I might publish one or two things that are my opinions on these things. And one of the things that's interesting is now both get attacked, eh? So it's not like people just attack your opinion. If you publish I published yesterday an article in the Financial Times and somebody says, well, you know, this is what neoliberal or, neoliberal economics 101 looks like.
So labeled and therefore it's got to fit into that category and discredited without even engaging in the content.
The article, by the way, was about doctors in Zimbabwe who said that they will not show up for work until the government pays them in USD. That was the article. Now, I'm not sure what on earth
how do you even Smithsonian get to that,
economics has to do with that. It's just like, you almost want to ask, did you read the article? And you just keep quiet, you know, just let it be.
Yeah, it's fascinating because that is the other thing is that we don't read the articles. We read the headlines.
Yeah.
And that's what we engage in. So we don't, it's a metaphor. We just don't go beneath the surface. We look at, what the top headline is and so it goes. So how do we move through that? Because I do think that all most South Africans all want the same thing. The noise on Twitter, we've seen it, that it doesn't often translate to what the reality is and what the real concerns are. And as you're saying, because a lot of people actually don't have time for it. They don't have time for the Zoom calls and spending their day on Twitter. They're actually working and making a living or trying to in any event. How do we change what is perceived as reality to what actually is reality, which is the common thread or the golden thread that runs through the entire country?
So I think it's such a deeply nuanced question. I think one of the things to recognize is that there are many South Africans for whom the promise of this democracy we live in has not materialized. There are many South Africans who've gotten poorer, many South Africans who've gotten unemployed over the period of the past 26 years, many South Africans who've received a poorer quality of education, and many South Africans who yet can't access the economy. They can't access the financial and capital market system. They just can't. And unless we deal with those real issues, it's very hard for us to have a all-inclusive debate. So, for instance, for a young entrepreneur who comes up with an innovation living in Kuno or living in Lebowakgomo or living in Kuruman, do they have the same access to funding as Vusi growing up in Joburg? The answer is no, they don't. And unless we deal with the dispersion, and that's the correct word here, the dispersion of access and the dispersion of opportunities, we're not going to deal fundamentally with the elements that the, you know, those who want to divide us use. Because the elements of the people that want to, the elements that they use are there. They're in society. It's our glaring levels of inequality. It's our glaring levels of wealth distribution along race and gender lines. And until you deal with those two things, you're unfortunately not going to unlock the equity that they tap into every single electioneering cycle. And so, for instance, this is precisely why a well-written, well-structured, thoroughly lucid academic research document doesn't carry as much favor as food parcels. It's because of the nature of our society. Mm. You know, if you went right now to any poor community and said, here's this document about how we need to restructure the banking system or the Reserve Bank, or how we need to free up Spectrum is a good one, right? Mm. It's a nice apolitical one. Let's free up Spectrum, right? If you went into any community and called a town hall, I think you'd be lucky if you got 10 people in the room. But if you promised them a t-shirt and a food parcel, it would fill up. And that tells you everything you need to understand about the economics of our politics of the day. And until we change that, you can't really change the driver, because we're not dealing with the fundamental underlying issues.
Yeah, that's absolutely, absolutely right. Do you think our government is capable of it? Do you think they actually see it? Do you think they actually understand it and feel that which the people of the nation are feeling?
Jeez, you ask tough questions.
Sorry, and it's so early. I normally only like to ask these questions after 9.
You know, I think one of the things to consider is that word government, for me, many South Africans don't even understand the system of governance that we have. So we have something called a cooperative governance model. Mm. And that infers that national party, or rather national government officials don't have power at a local government level. And that's why many people miss probably the most powerful thing that came out of Cyril's speech over the last little while, was he said ministers would now oversee the implementation of programs in local districts and municipalities. In effect, he overreached the power of the provinces. Now, there have been people who have been writing very ably. Some of them, I don't agree with their political views, but I do agree with this point, that there is actually no need for South Africa to have provinces, because as is the case with many big businesses, the more layers of management you introduce, the more lethargic that business will be for change and innovation. Mm-hmm. So South Africa is kind of a startup, if you think about it. It's a 26-year-old startup. And if you want to get the startup to move faster, you have to remove the levels of complexity and remove the layers of management so that you can get decision makers to make decisions quickly and implementers to implement those decisions really, really quickly. So your question is, do the people in government? Well, the real question is, which people in government? Because you've got ministers who sit in parliament and argue for policies and are the political heads of decisions being made. You've got directors general whose job it is to enforce and implement those policies. You've got local councils, local municipalities whose job it is service delivery. And somewhere in the midst, you've got provinces. And I'm not quite sure how to phrase what it is that their job is. So when we talk about does government understand it, make no mistake, there are people in government who are thoroughly gifted, very committed, very, very hardworking. Mm-hmm. But they, just like any other system, if you've ever joined a big business that are slow and lethargic to change, and you kept coming up with ideas, and the culture was so embedded and so entrenched that the idea went nowhere, my experience of a lot of the very talented people in government is that's exactly what they go through. They get into the organization of government, and by the time they're in, it's so lethargic and so slow to move that it's debilitating. And then they become a part of the culture rather than apart from it.
Absolutely fascinating. We do unfortunately need to leave it there. I could do this for hours. I'm getting so many messages saying so wise, speaks so wisely. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you consider that a compliment or not. But that is absolutely up to you. Vusi Tembekwayo, thank you for chatting to us. As I say, I could do this for hours. Really, really interesting. And just keeping the voice of reason that you are, you provide a tremendous amount of comfort and rationality to South Africans, because yours is the type of voice that we do need to hear. It is 8:29.